This week's Slice of Sci-Fi is a double header, two directors of brand new indie horror features that are out now, so stay tuned. Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is director Elle Callahan, whose new movie, Headcount, will be arriving June 14th, to be exact. She is the director, the co-writer, the source of this rather, shall we say, unusually eerie story. Welcome, Elle.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So the story Headcount is about a bunch of 20-somethings, late teens, who decide to go out to Joshua Tree National Forest, and while telling ghost stories, something strange finds them and hijinks ensue.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So where
hijinks ensue.
Where did the inspiration for this story come from? Was it a specific ghost story? Was it a monster that haunted you as a child, or somewhere else?
I've always been a big fan of monsters and folklore, and so I wanted to create my own, and I kind of took bunch of my favorite ones and meshed them all together. I pulled a lot from skinwalkers and wendigos and created a history. And my co-writer and I, a year prior to the film, had gone out to Joshua Tree with a bunch of our friends and thought that it was a very uniquely creepy place at night. And also during the day. And we thought, you know, it would be a great place to set a movie. And so I designed a monster that would kind of utilize that situation in the best way. So that's kind of how that came to be.
Well, I'm a big fan of ghost stories told around campfires, but the accidental summoning of this movie's, shall we say, entity was a little unexpected, but the fact that we didn't really see the creature in its original glory is, it adds to the creepy factor, because you're not sure if you're seeing something, what you're seeing. Where did the idea to have it presented in such a minimalist way come from?
Really just my love of the idea of fear in hindsight. All of my kind of scariest moments in my life are the ones that I look back and realize, you know, I thought I was safe and in control of the situation, and in reality I was in danger, and my own instincts kind of failed me. So, you know, when they summon this monster, it's not like this big, huge scene. It's like they say this chant, and then they go about their night, and they don't realize that they've just set into motion, you know, events that will lead to some, you know, spooky and dangerous stuff. So it's kind of like, I tried to make it as realistic as possible. And I think for me, that's just this whole fear in hindsight mentality.
What was important for you to have the actors get across, the trying to keep everything casual and fun because, hey, we're on vacation, or the slow creeping realization there's something truly messed up going on and we're not seeing it?
I think it's a balance, both of those, you know. It's I tried to make it realistic in that, you know, some of the characters, like Max, is through the whole movie just kind of like, you guys are being crazy and I'm out here to have fun and this is stupid and stop talking about all this weird stuff that's going on. Because I, you know, fully believe that there's always that person in the group that's like, I'm here to enjoy myself and I need you guys to just get on board. Whereas you have, you know, some other characters that are more, have a little bit maybe more patience and more awareness and are a little more like cautious and curious about these strange happenings that are going on. So I think having both of those aspects kind of tied together into a more believable story.
How about the ever increasing strangeness? Did you have a plan for that progression? Because you see little tiny things that are just off that you barely notice, and then they become more and more prevalent as you go on. What was the impetus to have that sort of progression?
Yeah, so that was very planned out. I had a big plan of, I knew everything that was happening on screen and then everything that was happening off screen in the story. So we might be following one character, but things might be happening in another room. And then later you kind of see the aftermath of that. Our monster is constantly around these kids, and it's also constantly rearranging and doing strange things on and off screen. So we had to track its movements, even if it wasn't in the shot, just because it was always there. And we wanted there to be a rhyme and reason for everything that was happening and not just random spooky things strung together. So there was a big plan and a lot of effort put into keeping everything straight and having that natural progression of strangeness build throughout the film.
And that brings me to how some of the scenes where the monster is messing with people were shot. Because it took me a second to realize what was going on. I had to actually go back and watch a scene to realize that you were trying to draw people's focus to not only what was going on in the foreground, but with the people in the background as well. And how did you set those shots up? Because that was a really, really interesting way to keep your focus split and ramp up the confusion/tension about what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I like to stack shots like that to draw your attention to one part of the frame, when in reality, like, the scare or the eerie creepiness is actually happening on the other side. Because I just think it kind of messes with you as an audience member, because we inherently trust what we're being shown on the screen. It's like, all right, if these two characters are talking close to the front of the frame, then that should be what I'm paying attention to. But in reality, what you really should be paying attention to in the danger is happening in the background, or vice versa. And I think I try to pull moments like that from my own life where, you know, I was paying attention to something and I should have been paying attention to something else. And I think those moments are the scariest for me. And I tried to just, like, inject that into my film.
Now, I don't want to spoil too much, but the characters, the actual vacationers, are being, shall we say, imitated. There's an imposter. The monster itself is a skinwalker, a shapeshifter. Did you give any direction to the actors to play their doppelganger selves differently from their real selves?
Mm-hmm. The monster has its own personality and motivations, and all of the actors got to read, like, this big 20-page document on the monster itself. Only them. So they knew exactly what its actual intentions were, because I think that's so much better than just being like, you know, act creepy, act scary. It's like, no, this monster has its own arc and its own reason, rhyme and reason for doing everything. So So I let each actor kind of bring, you know, interpret that how they wanted and represent that entity in a certain way when they were able to portray it.
Now, how many festivals has this been shown at so far?
I believe we only went to two before we got bought, and then it got pulled from the festival circuit so that it could come to streaming services and be available to the public. So, yeah.
How much audience feedback did you receive for it?
A fair amount. We had two screenings at the LA Film Festival. We sold out of our first screening in like under a day, which was kind of crazy. And then, so we got a second screening, which was really cool and fun. I like going and watching my films in theaters just because, you know, those gasps and are really what you kind of dream of as a director. We've had a very positive response to it, and I'm very happy with how it turned out.
What are some of the fan reactions that have surprised you or that really, really helped you get a feel for how the audience liked the film?
So when we did have those two screenings at that one festival, we had a few people that went back and bought a second ticket to watch it again because they wanted to see if they could pick up on things that they missed the first time while viewing it. And that was great because my intention with the film was for it to be watched twice, you know, the first time for you to enjoy it and be scared, and the second time to go back and kind of search for all the Easter eggs and all the stuff that's happening that you might not pick up on your first viewing. And, I had a bunch of people come up to me after their second viewing and say, there's so much, I enjoyed it. It was like a different film the second time. And that was really rewarding to hear because that was my original goal.
Now, the ending, was that in a sort of like leaving a door open for a sequel, or was there actually a change in the mythology for the monster?
I like to leave doors open. I've got sequels and prequels planned. Whenever I do something that has lore or mythology, I like to be able to expand upon it. When we were doing this film, I already had planned a second film and a film that could go before it because I wanted to make this film. And then if something else, you know, if it happened that we would get a sequel, to not have to just make it up based on the first one. It's like I like having a cohesive through line with mythology and a plan for everything. So it was very intentional the way that we ended it because I never like to close doors on things.
And because I am such a curious person about filmmaking, when this eventually hits home video, will there be extra footage and maybe a creator commentary track?
I would hope so. We have a couple scenes that got cut from the movie, so I would love to put those, in a special feature. We had a whole opening scene that had to do with the last time the monster was summoned that didn't make it into the final cut just based on pacing and stuff. But I would love for people to be able to see that eventually.
Cool. Well, Elle, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
It's Elle Callahan, the director and co-writer of the new indie thriller Head Count, which is going to be available on digital and on demand on June 14th. Go check it out, and we will be back with more Slices Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care.
I told that devil to take you back.
Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest right now is writer-director Steve Stanulis, and we're talking about his new movie, Clinton Road. Now, this film caught my attention because it refers to stuff that you find out from the magazine, the website, Weird New Jersey. And I spent some time in New Jersey. I escaped alive. And I needed to talk to Steve about his adventures with Weird New Jersey. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me. How's everything?
So far, so good.
That's funny.
Well, I was, because Weird New Jersey was one of those magazines I happened across by accident. And... Mm-hmm. You can't make that stuff up. I thought you could, but apparently New Jersey just sort of inspires weirdness. And seeing a movie about a haunted road in rural New Jersey that was inspired by an event in Weird New Jersey, I just had to say, I need to know more about this. So tell us about the movie, first of all.
Sure. Well, again, it was crazy how I even found out about Clinton Road, because horror is believe it or not, is not one of my usual genres to do. I had taken my mother to a doctor's appointment, and obviously I was sitting in the waiting room, and I was watching a show I would never watch called America's Scariest Places. And this happened to catch my eye, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I wonder where it is. It's probably like in West Virginia or some crazy bum backwards town. And at the end, I said, New Jersey. I'm like, no way. Because I live in New York, so I'm like, oh my God. So I actually made the trek down there, and I was a little fascinated, and I got kind of hooked and did my due diligence, and Clinton Road was born. So that's how it came to fruition, by total accident.
Now, did you write this, or did you take the idea to someone else and the two you collaborated? How did this go from a, hey, that's a wacky story, to, hey, I need to make a movie about this wacky story?
I actually, the way I usually do it with everything I work on is I usually come up with a concept, hire a writer, which I can't, I'm not a writer, and I have ADHD. So what was I just saying? That was a bad joke. But anyway, no, so I hire a writer, tell him what I want, and then he writes a draft, and Derek McKay, who I brought aboard, was great. And then if I say, hey, let's change this a little bit and tweak that, that's how we come to go through the whole process. So he helped me bring it to life. And again, that's usually how we collaborate. So I come up with the idea, and then he kind of puts it into a story form. And I love the fact, again, that the thing that intrigued me the most is that it's real. People Google it, it's real. There's so many stuff, so much material about it on YouTube, I don't know what those, what a real story is, what a fake story, what have you, but there's just so much on that one road. That's what kind of drew me to it, is because you could actually go there. So I figured the audience, if they get captivated by the film or just awareness of the film, that, it's cool to say, hey, we could go there ourselves. So that's the whole thing I kind of captured and caught my interest as a director.
Now, not to go into any spoilers, your story focuses on a firefighter whose wife has been missing, and circumstances prevail that he and his sister-in-law actually travel to this road with a medium to try to find out what happened to his wife and get closure. And, of course, since this is a horror movie, shenanigans ensue. But where did the idea for having this be a missing person, quasi ghost story? Because this is, I thought it was going to be more of a monster movie, and it turned out to be a little bit supernatural ghost angle. Where did you see this going, taking the ghost path?
Sure. Again, and unfortunately, we didn't have $20 million to make the ring. So you have to kind of use a little old-fashioned Hitchcockian tricks. But I took that angle because the two things I wanted to do is I wanted to have a reason why they're going there, come up with, create a reason for why these people are going to Clinton Road. So that was the angle for that. And then what I wanted to do is for all the people that are very familiar with Clinton Road, throw all the paranormal stories about the road, you know, the ghost boy, and the ghost truck and the bridge. So all of the stuff that is synonymous with Clinton Road, I want to, you know, kind of throw those in, with the coins. You know, supposedly you throw coins into the bridge, over the bridge, and he throws them back. So again, if you were familiar with it, you kind of catch all those little innuendos as far as what the road and the myths are. But, again, I just had to try to figure out something just to get them there. I didn't want them there just by happenstance or they break down on a bus, you know, like every other film. I just wanted to try to come up with some sort of creative idea to get them to the road. So that's where that kind of derived from.
Okay. So all of the different elements, supernatural elements that are in the movie are based on different real life experiences. Are these in real life on that road? Are they connected, or did you just, you were so fascinated with them, you didn't want to leave any of them out?
I was kind of fascinated with all of them, and I didn't want to leave any of them out because I know there's a lot of paranormal junkies and the, you know, the people that know about the road. I mean, because these were all different time frames and different stories. So there's been stories about troopers that from the 50s that just show up and pull people over. There's been stories about ghost truck. There's been stories about the little boy, about the infirmary. So I just, you know, wanted to kind of add them all in into the story where it made sense. It kind of ties everything in. But they were all different time periods if you go by the history in the Wikipedia of Clinton Road.
Now, did you talk to anyone who had directly had an experience or talk to any of the people involved with the Weird New Jersey magazine?
We did. And again, they were great because they gave us a lot of, not only information, they gave us a lot of old pictures and old stories and stuff that was actually kind of verified. They could have done more for us. And they were so accommodating that, you know, I want to give a shout out to Weird New Jersey because they really did a lot in the research for this film.
So tell us about a little bit about the making of it. You have some people in here, like in the beginning, you've got Vincent Pastore, you've got Ice-T. How did you guys split the directing duties? Because you have here that your co-director is Richard Grieco.
Right. Well, again, Rich is a dear friend, and he loved the story as well. And we worked great, and we worked hand in hand. He was always over my shoulder, you know, giving me input if scenes should go a certain way. So he did a lot. We split a lot of the stuff. So he did a lot of great stuff and gave a lot of input to the story as well. We knew each other for a long time. He loved all that stuff. We even punked him once on Clinton Road. So, we took him down there. We set something up. So I still think he's mad at me for that one, but, he was great. You know, Ice was Ice. You know, he was great. You know, he's a club owner that had experiences there. And again, Vincent's a dear friend, and I always want to kind of write it in and have a little comedic goofiness in the beginning to make it a lightheartedness in the film. And again, it's not something you usually see in a film like this, to see Eric Roberts and Vincent Pastore and Ice-T. So I think we had Dolores from the Jersey Housewives. I mean, they made a little cameos. So, you know, I just thought it was another element to something that you don't usually see in a horror film.
Now, most of this film...
And again, it kind of worked because everybody ran with Ice. You know what I mean? Ice, Ice is in like four or five scenes, but everybody kind of loves Ice. So, I mean... maybe we make a Clinton Road 2. It'll be about Ice going back there.
he's got to investigate what happened to all his buddies, right?
Right, and he was the first one to tell them don't go there because he had his experiences. So maybe Clinton Road too. Maybe we'll have Ice go back and see what happens.
Cool. Now this most of it occurs outdoors in the woods. Were there any challenges with making this outside at night?
Sure. I know you'd mentioned you're familiar with the road, right? You've been on the road?
I've not been on the road, but I did spend about 10 years in Jersey that felt like 100.
Okay. Yeah, right. So, if you're not familiar with the road, it's a 10-mile stretch of road. It's just two lanes. There's really no shoulder. And when you are on the terrain in going into the woods, it's kind of on an angle. So the terrain is rough. There's no cell phone service at all. And the one creepy thing that did happen a lot was our batteries were getting drained very quickly. Fully charged batteries on the camera were getting drained quickly. And they say that's a big sign that something is trying to, I guess, manifest by using the energy of the batteries. So that was kind of unusual. The most unusual thing that happened to us there. But with the way the terrain was, obviously there are cars that drive through it. So, luckily the police over there were great in helping us with the traffic. But it wasn't the most ideal place to shoot because of the terrain and the structure of the road. And a lot of people ask me, was it weird? Was it scary? I guess the first 10, 15 minutes when you're anywhere, you kind of like, you get that little weird feeling. But then once you start shooting, you just kind of get in a mode. And after a while, you actually even forget where you are. So I would say the worst part of shooting there would be the way the structure of the woods was. And, being on the road was very dangerous.
Well, choosing to use the actual haunted road adds a little bit of, shall we say, suspicious atmosphere to everything that's going on. So that was a lot of fun.
Important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was important because, yes, could we have cheated it and could we have gone to another woods? Would anybody have really known? Probably not. Could we have, just shot the exterior of the road and you went to another road? Probably so, but it was important for the integrity of the film to shoot on the whole thing at Clinton Road. That was the one thing that was the one coup and the one thing I had to have in order to do this was that we had to shoot the whole thing there.
Cool. Now, how long did it actually take to shoot everything?
We shot the whole movie again as a lower budget is. I mean, we shot the whole thing in about 15, 16 days.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we had a great cast of great up and coming actors and actresses, with Ace Young, Cody, Calafiore, Erin O'Brien, the whole cast there. I'll give him a shout out. And we had Jimmy DiBello, who was in The Cabin. He also Detroit Rock City was phenomenal as the clairvoyant. It was a nice blend we had.
Now, this film is getting its theatrical release this weekend or next week. No, this weekend.
This Friday.
Yeah. What sort of events are you having with it? Have you gone to any like special premiere screenings? What sort of, the shiny lights perks of releasing a film?
Again, tomorrow we have a big release, a pre-release party in New York. And then we're having a red carpet event on Friday at the theater. We're turning a nice event into a nice into a 2-day event. But we expect a lot of press, a lot of paparazzi. Most of the cast will be there, depending on their schedule. Plus other friends from other films I've worked on that are, you know, pretty big names. So it should be a fun event. Again, it's not something I foresaw happening on this particular one. Only again, I don't want to keep saying the same thing, but it was a lower budget. So you most times lower budget films in this world very rarely get theatrically released. And we got, I think about 12 different cities. So it's not just, you know, a New York, LA thing. We're in, I think, Minnesota, Chicago, Ohio. You know what the funny thing is? We're not in Jersey, which I thought was a shoo-in. But again, we don't choose that. The distributors do. But I thought for sure we'd be in Jersey. But we did at least screen at the Garden State Film Festival, and it did win Best Horror Film. So I thought it was very apropos that the first time we showed the film was in the Garden State Film International Film Festival. So that was fun. But we have a nice array of states where the film is going to screen.
Cool. Well, where can folks find you online, and are you working on anything else coming up?
You should. Now you opened up a can of worms. since you're in this is the horror world here. We actually are in post production on the Hinsdale House, which is actually themed this generation's Amityville. It's up in Hinsdale, New York. We shot again the whole thing in the house. We start shooting a film called Chronicle of a Serial Killer starting this Monday with DMX, Brendan Sexton, Eric Roberts, Shaq Scalia. It's a great cast. Dominique Swain. And that's basically in the vein of Seven. You know, with the movie with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman.
Cool. Anyway. I'm just listening to all the names, and like you're like working on three different movies here.
We have a film with Netflix called The Fifth Borough, which is basically The Sopranos meets The Departed on Staten Island, with again Tara Reid, James Russo, Federico Castelluccio, Lilo Brancato. You notice there's a lot of vowels at the end of those names, but there's a lot going on. So I'm happy, I'm blessed, and it's a really fun time. It's a fun time to grind, and then things start to come to fruition. And as always, there's nothing going on, or it's all happening at the same time. So blessed and humbled.
So could people find you online? Do you have a website, Twitter?
Sure. On Instagram is @stevestanulis. Twitter is @stvstanulis. Facebook, it's Steve Stanulis. And Stanulis Film, www.stanulisfilms.com. And you can see everything going on.
Cool. Well, we will have links to that and to some areas that are playing the film in theaters starting this weekend. It looks like Arizona, New York, L.A., Massachusetts, Atlanta.
How did I forget L.A.? I'm naming Ohio. I'm forgetting L.A.
Well, we'll have that list so people can go check it out near them, if it happens to be near them. Steve, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been my absolute pleasure. Again, I hope everybody out there enjoys it. And thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. The movie is Clinton Road, a new horror indie feature coming out from Midnight Releasing starting June 14th. Check it out. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And if you get a chance, hopefully by the time you're listening to this, the review for Headcount will already be up on the website, sliceofscifi.com. So check that out as well. A lot of people are doing some special events for the upcoming 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. And our good friend Rod Pyle has written several books about the astronauts and the Apollo missions. We'll be talking to him hopefully soonish. He's got a lot of books coming out this year, but that's not a bad thing at all. There's some other books about the space race and the chase to be the first to land on the moon and to get back to the moon. We are going to hopefully be talking to some of those authors coming up as well. The contest for the Blu-ray Season 1 set of Krypton should be starting next week, Monday-ish, the 17th, sort of. So keep an eye out for that. That will not be a special secret sauce contest. That will be a regular Rafflecopter contest on the website, so keep an eye out for that. The special secret sauce contest will go on for one more week. I want to have the winners selected and hopefully their prizes en route before the 1st of July, because I will be, shall we say, wandering around again. I won't be out of doors. I won't be living rough, but I will be mobile. So if you haven't entered the contest yet, what are you waiting for? Now is a prime time. Go to sliceofscifi.com, click on the Contact Us link, fill out the form, and yes, please use a valid email address so I can contact you to get you your prize if you're one of the winners. Fill out the form, select Have a Different Question on the subject line, and then in the message box, type the phrase, "The night is dark and full of terrors." If you enter that incorrectly, you should see a magical section just appear with a list of prizes. Pick one, pick two, pick three. Have at it. And once the contest is closed, winners will be randomly picked, and it'll be a first-come, first-serve kind of thing. I haven't yet figured out how to let people who are entering the contest rank the prizes they want in order. I'm looking into that because code is fun, and maybe we'll play that out for next time. Some contests coming up in August, perhaps. We'll see. We'll see. But if you have any questions or comments on indie horror, on Warner Brothers animated DC Universe feature films coming up, because those are awesome. How is it possible that the animated Suicide Squad features were just a hair, more than a hair, better than the feature we got? How is that possible? I don't know. But I am looking forward to seeing what James Gunn does with the Suicide Squad reboot, because he's a comics fan. He knows what we expect. Therefore, I expect a better movie. I really do. But Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's right. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Batman in the same animated feature. I'm in awe. That's all I'm going to say. People know how to have fun making these films, and I hope they continue to impress us. But as I was saying, if you have any questions or comments, please call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can send an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, through Google Play, through TuneIn, and Player FM. And yes, you can leave us a review in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. So please, if you're enjoying the show, let other people know that you are having fun too, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. Yes, it is quite easy to get me roped into a geeky conversation on Twitter. You may find me engaging in such geekiness. from time to time, depending on what show is on, what show people are live tweeting. And I've also been known to tweet out updates about the reruns of Babylon 5 that are on Comet TV from that Twitter handle, which is at Babylon Podcast, if you are a Babylon 5 fan. The Babylon Podcast website has been newly updated to be mobile responsive, mobile friendly. So that is one more item off my to-do list. And all 300 episodes, 7 seasons of talking about Babylon 5 are available through Apple Podcasts, through Google Play, and through Stitcher. And I think Player FM is as well. So if you didn't catch all of Babylon Podcast before, now's the time. It's not going anywhere. The reason I mention Babylon Podcast is because your donations, your support through Patreon, through PayPal, help keep that site and those shows online, as well as the ones here at Slice of Sci-Fi. We have Writers After Dark. We have the Archives of a Different Point of View, which are the, shall we say, the observations of the Star Wars universe viewed from the eyes of an Imperial Sand Trooper, TD0013. Yes, that's a throwback to old fans of Dragon Page and the first wing in it. Those are still out there. And we have Charlie Jade, which is still out there too. So all of your donations, all of your pledges, help keep those online for other geeks to enjoy. So thank you for that. And if you want to add your support, you can go over to Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi, and select a monthly pledge. Yes, there are perks to being a patron. People haven't been taking me up on them when they are selected as winners for that month's perk, but I will keep offering because I can. If you just want to donate every now and then, you can use the PayPal link, paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And again, thank you to everybody who is supporting. I'd like to also throw a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the theme music here. If you want to find out more about them or listen to more of their original geek rock and their parodies, go on over to their website, sci-fried.com. Thank you all for listening. That'll do it for this episode. Please visit the website. Please say hi on Twitter if you're bored someday. Check out the videos on YouTube. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.